When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we are joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm good. It's a Sunday. We're recording this on a Sunday, and it's kind of late for you. It's later than it usually is. So for anybody listening out there, if Chris seems a little bit sleepy, that's why I've insisted that he records on a Sunday at 2 p.m. my time. Like, it's like 10 p.m. where you are, pretty much, at past 10?
It's 10 p.m. It's the latest, I think, we've ever done a podcast before.
Incorrect, Chris, drunk. Because I did one. You're a little bit drunk. Good. Well, I'm glad you're admitting it on air. Lovely old job. Yeah, but when you're drunk, you can't really tell. It's actually quite annoying. You're not a sloppy drunk. It's quite annoying, to be quite frank.
I am not a sloppy drunk. I like that. Sloppy drunk. I've never sloppy heard drunk. That phrase before.
Never catch you on Shibuya Uncovered. It'll never catch you, what's it called? Shibuya Meltdown.
Shibuya Meltdown.
Never catch you out. So yeah, never catch you on public transport asleep with vomit all down your front.
that is a frighteningly disgusting image to kick things off to. Me on a train covered in sick. Brilliant, Pete. Raise the bar every week.
Yeah, every single time. But I like the fact that, I mean, you say that it's the latest that you've ever recorded a podcast. It's not the latest I've ever recorded a podcast with you. I've recorded one at like 1 a.m. England time. So that was like, that's pretty,
sacrifices.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, so it's one all in my opinion. It's one all.
It's a sacrifice you have to make when being on the Abroad in Japan podcast. The 8-hour time difference is a difficult thing to get past, but somehow we've done it for 2.5 years now. It's quite an achievement, technically and creatively. I'm in a good mood, though. Alcohol aside, because do you know, are you aware of Hanko stamps and what they are and how they work? Well, I think we might have talked about them before.
Hanko stamps. When you go to the bank, you've got to have a little stamp with you to set on your signature, no?
Yeah. Basically, right. I think it's kind of like they come from China hundreds of years ago, old kind of traditional culture. I remember when I first arrived in Japan, I was delighted about this Hanko stamp. You get your name carved on it, right? A little bit of plastic, little stamp. And then you stamp it with documents and things, typically with banking. But as great as that is, and as cool as it might seem, it's very inconvenient and annoying because every time you need your damn Hanko stamp, you just don't have it with you, or at least I don't. And numerous are the times that I've had to do something and they've asked for a Hanko stamp. I don't have it. I don't walk around with a stamp in my pocket. I barely have anything in my pocket, let alone a stamp. And it's just like screwed me over. Not only that, but on my first Hanko stamp, it was after about 6 months of using it, I went to get some car insurance using the stamp. And they said I couldn't use it because they didn't like my name being in katakana characters or something. Something I don't really understand. So I had to get another stamp. That first stamp was void. And I just had so many problems. I could spend this entire podcast ranting and raging about how much I hate Hanko stamps. But I am in a good mood because of the coronavirus. They're going to phase them out because of the fact that people aren't traveling around as much. They're trying to do things more digitally now. So they're phasing them out. Yes, brilliant. And now I think what I read is that companies that want to keep the Hanko stamp have to write to the government saying why they want to keep them. So hopefully this means that they will actually be phased out and I need never use that damn stamp ever again. So I'm in a good mood. That is why.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a very rare group of people who obviously moved to Japan. I would find the idea of having a little stamp that I've got to bring with me to the bank utterly charming for the first three times. And then after that, I'd be in exactly the same boat as you are. But at this moment in time, I am absolutely very excited about the idea of having a little kind of stamp to replace my signature. Because my signature is pretty poor at the best of times. It's not the worst I've ever seen, but it's a pretty poor signature. Did you ever at school sort of like spend a lot of time like perfecting your signature? Because I did. And it's got worse over years.
No, Pete, I got out on the playground, mate. I wasn't sitting inside doing my signature over and over. That big.
Well, I
probably should
have done. Famous, see?
Well, I mean, I probably should have done. My signature's rubbish. It changes like every day. It's different. So I think, I don't know if that's illegal, but it changes a lot.
Well,
so
the I remember when we did the Football Ramble book, we released a book about two or three years ago, and we did went out on tour, and there were book signings at that tour. And I mean, obviously, I was absolutely mortified about the idea of anybody, anybody wanting my signature or even reading anything I've written. But yeah, I was just signing my normal kind of what you would call an autograph, but it was actually just my signature. So like people could very easily defraud me out of money, I reckon, by copying my signature. So you need like, so if you're going to be a well-known person, I think you need to invent your own kind of little, strange version of your own signature that isn't quite the one you'd put on a check, for example.
I've decided I want your signature now, Pete. I want it. I want an autograph. Yes. I want to cash in. I want to exploit this. I mean, these days, though, people don't really ask for autographs and things. I think I've only had to sign a signature once or twice in 8 years of doing this, and of the hundreds of times I've bumped into viewers or listeners, and I enjoy it. But these days, it's just a selfie, and to be honest, that's much better. One time, I found myself in Don Quixote in Shibuya, and some guy was like, I want your signature. I was like, oh, okay. And we spent at least 5 minutes looking for a pen around the floor of Don Quixote. I was busy. I was like, I've got things to do. And he's like, I just need to get a pen. I was like, oh, okay, we'll get the pen. And we walk around fucking Don Quixote looking for a pen.
And
we didn't find one.
Pineapple pen.
Pineapple pen. We didn't find a pen, for God's sake. Yeah. Instead, he went, just as we were about to get to the pen section, he's like, oh, actually, can we just get a selfie instead? I was like, I'm going to kill you. And the photo is going to be me punching you in the face. Got the photo. I was like, I've got to go now. Bye. And that was the worst time I've ever met a viewer anywhere. And luckily, that is the only time it's been bad. Every other time it's been pleasant. So,
your listeners are always very, your fans are always your fans. And I'm going to say fans. Your aficionados are always very, very sweet and very, very pleasant. And they're always incredibly polite. Football fans can be slightly more abrasive, let's say, when they've had a few drinks. when you're doing a book signing, sign my book, you shits.
I guess I'm lucky in that regard. The viewers and listeners of the Abroad Japan channel and podcast are brilliant, which is you at home listening to this. You are amazing. With that, we turn our attention to story of the week. What do we got? We've got one from Frank this week. He says, hi, Chris and Pete. I thought you might like to hear from possibly one of your oldest listeners, 73. Wow. I think you might be the oldest listener, Frank. That's amazing. Thanks for tuning in.
Cracking.
I thought you might like to hear of a couple of my experiences in the last century to Japan. In 1986, I worked in Tokyo for a few months, and as part of this, while we were there, we were given Japanese lessons. For homework, 1 week, we were tasked with finding some examples of Japanese writing and to bring them back for translation. A colleague had been outside Shinjuku Station and watched with bemusement as a highly decorated truck blasted out very enthusiastically some sort of loud message. One of the truckers handed out leaflets, and my colleague took one. Homework solved. He brought it back, and back in the classroom, our teacher, who was Japanese, with some embarrassment, explained that the leaflet basically called for all foreigners to go home. Love the show, Frank. Oh, dear. It's one of the racist trucks. Yeah.
It's one of the racist trucks. We love a racist truck. They are just so popular around Shinjuku, Shibuya. That's a wonderful story. You just come back going, what does this mean then? And, oh, no, I'm so embarrassed. The teacher has been so mortified. Go on, Frank.
So it's always Shinjuku as well. I remember the infamous video of like the same group of people. I'm not sure what the organization's called. It's kind of like this very extreme right-wing political organization that go around with trucks. Mm. And when I, not that long ago, I remember in my first apartment in Sendai, I've lived in two apartments in Sendai. The first one, for some reason, every bloody week, one of these kind of right-wing trucks was driving around my neighborhood playing propaganda really loudly. And it's this kind of 1950s Enka style music with like horrible, like evil sounding propaganda thrown in. And you don't want to hear that at like 4 p.m. You're sitting on the sofa having a nice afternoon coffee. Truck goes past. Oh, everyone, these foreigners, rubbish. Foreigners suck. We hate them. Go home. It's like, oh, maybe they knew I lived there. Probably. That seems quite likely.
Probably just doing donuts outside your house, spraying their filth orally at you. What do they actually sort of say in those things? Are they just really to a point kind of just saying foreigners go home? There's no like, you know, there's no kind of dog whistling or kind of tempered language. It's just like foreigners go home, fuck off, Gaijin.
I mean, it typically is aimed at Chinese and Korean residents, right, which make up the bulk of the foreign resident population in Japan. But I mean, and also white people. Like, there's a famous video on YouTube. You can type in "white pig go home," and it's hilarious. It's a group of like, must be like 30, 40 of these guys walking with banners in front of like the Park Hyatt Hotel in Shinjuku, and they're just going, "White pig go home, white pig go home." It's just like, oh, what are you doing? It just sounds ridiculous. It's so comical. And there's a group of like American tourists, I think, just standing out the front of the hotel, just looking bemused and confused. Like, they're probably jet lagged. They've just flown in from New York and they've come out the hotel. Yeah, Japan. And there's just a group of 30 people with banners going, "White pig, go home." But you can look that up on YouTube. It is good. It's amazing.
That's a little bit depressing, isn't it?
It is. But I mean, this isn't an accurate reflection of Japan, to be honest. I don't see them that often. And the first time I did see it was in near Ueno Station. If you come out Ueno Station, there's often like a truck there doing it, playing the silly music. There's someone standing on the roof of a camper van or something, just shouting through a loud hailer. And it's almost comical, really. You can't really take it seriously, so... Yeah, but it's rare. So don't worry about it. It's not going to happen to you. But if it does, it'll be funny. Get a leaflet.
I just like the fact that if you are a Japanese fascist and you want everyone who's not pure blood Japanese to go home, like, you must be pretty happy with the situation, because it's a very non-ethnically diverse country. It's the only place in the whole world, apart from maybe North Korea, that doesn't have anybody going in or out.
Absolutely. And at 98.5% of the population is ethnically Japanese. So I don't know why you're really even bothering.
The job satisfaction must be really high. Yep, job done.
We must be doing something right. Ridiculous. Mm. Anyway, I'm holding here something of great value, Pete. I'm trying to open it, steady, as you can hear. Look at that.
You're in a hotel ASMR room, after all.
I'm in a hotel room. And I've got Pringles. London flavour, Pete. London flavour Pringles. Oh. Would you believe
it? Oh, good Lord. Yeah. Oh, I mean, you sent me a link for these and I didn't realise you actually had a packet with you. Passport flavours. I presume there's different kinds of flavours, but I mean, just it just looks dread. I mean, there's it's like fish and chip flavour, isn't it? That seems to be the
it is fish and chip flavour. It literally says Pringles London fish and chips passport flavour. I think maybe the idea being you can't travel at the moment, so why not bring the flavour of London to Pringles and enjoy them in Japan, which is what I'm about to do. Let's crack open these Pringles.
Get them open.
They smell like cardboard. But Pringles do that. Passport flavour. They smell like cardboard, don't they? Best flavour.
No, it's just sweet pins in it. I mean, my favourite crisp, easily, Pringles.
Really? You like Pringles?
I love them. Love Pringles. Yeah, right. I always eat too many of them and then I have stomach pains. I mean, I'm not saying that Pringles always give people stomach pains, but I will eat an entire long tube of salt and vinegar Pringles and then just feel terrible about myself for the next day. But it'll be worth it.
I like Pringles with dip. I'm going to dip right now. Right, so it says, British fast food, tartar sauce and salt balance flavour. And honestly, it doesn't taste like fish and chip. It tastes like prawn cocktail gone wrong. Oh no, I don't like this. It's just terrible.
For anybody who gets very upset with hearing people eating on podcasts, this is very much. This is really going to grind their gears.
Yeah, that's the end of the Pringle London fish and chips flavour. It's not good. I was excited. I thought it might be like salt and vinegar, right? Because most people put salt and vinegar on their fish and chips. Instead, it's kind of like a... it just tastes of cardboard.
It's like rats.
And
it tastes like
cardboard
the bubonic
and tartar sauce. It's awful. I mean...
Enjoyable.
What I want to know what other passport flavours there are, though. Like, what would be the flavour of, say, America, of New York, you think?
A New York slice of pizza.
Pizza flavour.
Pizza rat. Pizza rat flavour. Remember the pizza rat?
Ah, pizza rat. What about Germany? What would that be? Berlin flavour.
Schnitzel. Delicious schnitzel.
Schnitzel. That'd work.
Yeah. Or it'd be like pork knuckle or something like that. They like their meat over there, don't they? Or currywurst. Currywurst. Man, I'm sure a crisp flavour must have been. I mean, it's just curry flavour, crisp, isn't it? It's a currywurst. I love currywurst. It's like tomato sauce with curry powder sprinkled into it. Oh, wow. Beautiful.
It is good. It's very good. Mm. And you could bet that it would be better than London flavour fish and chips, Pringles. I just love the packaging. Like, if you want to see what it looks like, folks, just type in Pringles London fish and chip Japan, and you'll see it's just got a nice red photo of Big Ben and some fish and chips, and but don't actually buy them. If you're in Japan, listen to this, best avoided, unless you want to take a photo for Twitter. And in fact, that is what I'm going to do. Just bought them to exploit them.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes to open the door to Amazon. Only we watched with Jesus the 25 minutes first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
And I was like taking all this negativity onto myself, and I did. I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Are you a YouTuber?
Wow.
Right. Pringles aside.
Can I just jump in here, Chris? Because you obviously, you've obviously been drinking all day. You're so exhausted by your level of consuming alcohol that you've confused. You said there's a picture of Big Ben on the front of the Pringles, but it's not Big Ben, though, is it, Chris?
Big Ben's
the bell, isn't it? And the clock is actually called Clock Steve. So it's actually a picture of Clock Steve on the front. So have a bit of that. So what arrogant dickheads say when you talk about Big Ben and you're describing the clock. Yeah, the clock is called Clock Steve.
How did I not know that? Then what's Big Ben, the tower itself?
No, it's the bell. I've been hosted by my potato because I was criticising people for pointing out that tediously that Big Ben is the name of the bell rather than the tower. And I fall into my own trap here. So you saw me in an absolute kipper there, or rather a slice of fish and tartar sauce. But Clock Steve is the name of the clock. So
if you were here right now, I would throw a Pringle at you for making me look stupid with my lack of Big Ben knowledge. You've been doing far too many pub quizzes, Pete. Haven't you?
Clock Steve.
Yeah, Big Ben. Yep. Bloody Steve Clock. Right. I came across an interesting story today. The Japan's oldest woman is now 117 years old.
Right.
I think the third oldest person on record of all time is now a 117-year-old Japanese woman called Kane Tanaka. And apparently she lives on a diet of cola and board games and chocolate.
Ooh,
but not Pringles. She's in Fukuoka, and it's really interesting. Like, it's, as most people know, Japan's population is formidably old. I think there's a statistic that by 2040, 35% of the population will be, I think, over 65 years old.
Right.
And the number of people over 65 in Japan is 36 million. And 80,000 people in Japan are over 100. So that is pretty crazy. That there's to this day, I still don't know how Japanese people just live so long. It's speculated that it's a diet.
Board games, isn't it?
It's board games and Coke. I mean, that's, yeah. I love, whenever I read about a super centenarian, God, it's too late and there's too much alcohol to
super centenarian.
Say a big word. Super centenarian. What is this? A test, if you can say super centenarian. But they always say, like, they've always like, oh, I love cigarettes. I don't stop smoking. I drink Coke. I like chocolate. They're always like really unhealthy and they're proud of it because they've lived to 150 years old or something and they've won because they haven't had a healthy diet. And they're like really kind of arrogant about it. I love it.
Yeah.
And I would do that too.
It's mainly genetic, isn't it? It's mainly genetic.
It definitely is. Definitely is genetic. I don't think I'll live anywhere near 117 years old. What would you do if you were 117 years old, Pete?
Oh, I would be lording of everyone. I'd be going, well, you may think that, but how many 117-year-olds have you spoken to? I'm 117, so whatever I think is more important and more relevant and more correct than whatever you could, because I have lived longer than anyone else in the world, so I have seen more shit than you have. So wind it in, sunshine.
That would work. And I mean, this is incredible, right? Kane Tanaka, She was born on the 2nd of January, 1903, which was the year the Wright brothers made their first powered flight. Think about that. Wow. When she was born, airplanes weren't even a thing. And she's lived through five Japanese emperors, the reign of five Japanese emperors as well. How insane is that? I just cannot compute that.
I think my nan was born in 1908, I think. Obviously, she's long dead. My mum texted me last week saying, your nan would have been, 117 or something today. I was like, yeah, it's not how that works, is it? It's like she didn't make that, does she? Like, it's all very well sort of going, happy 115th birthday to my nan. She made 96. Great innings, so,
That is a weird anniversary, but fair play to her living to 96. If I make it to anywhere near 96, I will be so happy. I'll eat Pringles, I don't know what I'll do.
At that point, she was powered by licorice and anger. nobody had a good word to say about her at her funeral, I seem to recall, which is, you sort of look back and you sort of go, it turns out my nan was a bit of a wrong.
Oh, God. Poor woman.
Bless her.
But Kane Tanaka, she's the third oldest person ever, right, behind Jean Carment, this French woman who died in 1997 at the age of 122. 122 years old. How is that even possible? And
that's 22 years of not great living as well. I mean, we all get excited about, living to that age, but I imagine anything north of 95 is a pretty miserable existence unless you're incredibly lucky when it comes to the genetics lottery, so to speak. But look, Kana Tanaka's eating chocolate and drinking fizzy pop and doing board games, so maybe she's enjoying the board game revolution that's happening right now. Settlers of Catan and all that business.
We get her in the advertising. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Imagine getting a 117-year-old woman from Japan to market your brand, your board game. That would work.
Cards Against Humanity.
Cards Against Humanity.
She's very offensive, this old lady.
That would probably take a few years off her very long life. Cards Against Humanity. But there you go. Third oldest woman in the world, now Japanese, Kane Tanaka in Fukuoka. Well done, her. I mean, that's the end of that bit. But well done. I'm really pessimistic. I think I'm going to live to, I'm going to say 50, 60, let's say 60. I've made this assumption, right, that I'm just going to die when I'm 50 or 60. Hopefully I'd make it to there. That'd be great. And the reason I've done that is if I get to 60, which I don't think I will, if I get there, I'll be like, oh, I've made it. This is great. But if I set my expectations low, well, I'll probably make it to 40, 50 or something. Then, I'll live now in the moment, right? I'll make every day count. I'll work hard now. And I think that's a good way of living in some respects. Or is it mental? What do you reckon?
Well, I only found out a couple of weekends ago that I've probably said this on every podcast I've been on the last couple of weeks because I am on a lot of podcasts, but I found out that my granddad had a heart attack at 53. So I'm like,
53.
Probably could have done with that information, to be honest, ma'am. She didn't tell me nothing. So I'm just like, probably could have done with that information. Probably want to get myself checked out. Mind you, he did work down the mine, and my job could not be further away from working down a mine.
You're not working on down the mine. You're on the Abroad in Japan podcast.
Exactly. Mining content.
Mining content. Speaking of mining content, we turn our attention now to the fax machine. What do we got this week from the fax machine, Mr. Dawson?
Mike from Berlin, who probably has on more than one occasion had himself a curry verse. Dearest Peter and Christopher, one of the most quintessential Tokyo moments of my life visiting was when I was in a packed subway and a man stood in front of the doors, turned round and politely but firmly pushed me further into the carriage with his bum. Not the most pleasant experience, but it made me feel like I was in one of those stereotypical clips about Japan. With this in mind, my question is rather a practical one. What's the situation on the subways in Tokyo? Is it a ghost town or is it as busy as it used to be? And are there any restrictions? Are there procedures in place that differ from the norm? Thank you for all the great Japanophile banter. Mike from Berlin.
Well, I am in Tokyo at the moment.
It is
noticeably quieter, and certainly the subways and the trains are a lot quieter than usual. I'm going to make a quick estimate and say it's like 25% less, because a lot of companies people are teleworking, people are working from home, right? So that's a big factor. Mm. And obviously there's no foreign tourists as well. There are supposed to be 30 million foreign overseas tourists coming this year. The figure is in fact zero, which is terrible, right? Imagine a year ago turning to someone and being like, guess what? Guess the number of people coming to Japan next year. Is it 30 million? No. Is it 20 million? No. Is it 10 million? No, it's zero. None are coming whatsoever. And there's no Olympics. You would have been laughed out the room. It still blows my mind. I still don't understand.
He's having a lovely time. He's going, this is the best year of my life.
That man, sad life. He must be so happy. But it's no, it's very quiet. And I mean, the changes at the moment are whatever you're doing, wherever you are, you need to wear a mask. If it's in a taxi, train, hotel, a building, a toilet, just have a mask on. There'll be mask signs everywhere. Right. And if you don't wear a mask, you'll get looked at a lot because everybody else is wearing one, right? It's Japan. People wear masks before there was a pandemic. Now everyone's wearing one. And as much as I dislike masks, I think they're very annoying. I do understand why they're important, and I do wear mine religiously as well. And there's lots of alcoholic spray everywhere. But yeah, so those are the main changes, really. Tokyo is noticeably quieter. It's a little bit eerie at times going down certain streets because bars that would have once been bustling are, you know, just quiet, and it's all a bit odd. Yeah. And in some respects, it is cool, though. You do feel like you've got Tokyo to yourself, but I'd rather have a Tokyo that didn't have a pandemic than the situation that we currently have, to be honest. It sucks.
Yeah.
Isn't great.
That does suck.
But going back to Mike from Berlin, I don't know if you haven't seen it, ladies and gentlemen, there is some fantastic videos of Tokyo subway trains where people are being pushed on with a stick, because in the trains, just general trains in Tokyo, at about 7-8 o'clock in the morning, which is rush hour, they force people on with a stick. Like, people have to crowd in and they can't get in, and they're like in the doorway and the doors won't close. So they've got staff, they've got teams of people around with sticks to push people in physically to the point where they can, like, the doors slam shut and lock them in, and then they're sort of pressed up against the window, their faces. Have you ever seen this, Pete? Have you ever seen this yourself?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it a few times, but I've never seen it in real life. I've never been on a train during rush hour. I think the earliest I've ever been on a train, I think it was a train that went straight into Shinjuku, Shibuya sort of area, and it was like maybe about 8 o'clock in the morning, and it wasn't too bad. But I guess it was the airport. It was the old Haneda Express, wasn't it? So it probably wasn't too bad.
That doesn't count. That's a nice train.
That's not really a train. Nobody's on that. It is a nice train.
it's thoroughly unpleasant, though. I've done it like a few times, and I swore never to ride a train at like 8:30 in the morning in Japan again, because you can't move. It's really kind of surreal. Like, you've been on a busy train in London, but this is like next level. Like, you really cannot move, and you can see all of a sudden how people get sexually assaulted on bloody trains. Why there's these perverts? Because somebody could, with a sneaky hand, as you always say, Mr. Tickle, you could do that quite easily if you are a dickhead, because you can't move, and you don't know where people are coming from, because you can't even turn, you can't move your head. It's horrendous. And as someone that doesn't like crowds that much, I was just like, I'm not doing that again. And that was about 3 years ago, and since then I've never ridden a train at that time of day. And I would strongly advise tourists, if you're coming to Japan, guys, don't get on the train in the rush hour. It's not fun, especially if you've got luggage.
Especially if you've got luggage, exactly, yeah.
Oh, God. Terrific. We've got one here from Yanis. He says, hello, Chris and Pete. Greetings from California, where everything has been on fire, both literally and figuratively. This year has not been a fun time, but it's been comforting to listen to the podcast during my commute to work. Unfortunately, I can't work from home. Sorry to hear that, Yanis. I feel incredibly grateful that I was able to take a trip to Japan last November with my friends before the pandemic hit, and hearing stories about people's trips to Japan brings back fond memories. One thing I really miss about Japan is the food. We tried so many dishes, ramen, katsudon, yakitori, mondoyaki. Apparently it's okonomiyaki with yakisoba on top. I think that was my favourite dish. And they were all very mouth-wateringly delicious. But one thing my friends and I found odd was the lack of dining options in the morning. When we arrived in Japan, we had made a packed schedule for ourselves. With so much to see, we agreed that we'd all try to wake up early every day and be ready to go by 9 a.m. Since we knew we'd be doing a lot of exercise, we wanted to start our mornings with a hearty breakfast. But We ended up having a hard time finding anything open before 10 a.m. We'd walk up and down the train stations in Tokyo and Kyoto and the nearby streets, and it would take up to an hour to find something open that looked like breakfast food. After a few days, we had to settle for pastries from a coffee shop or even curry. Good God. Side note, curry and coffee wasn't actually too bad of a combination. I'm not believing that, Yanis. My question is, what do Japanese people usually eat for breakfast? From what we saw, I assume that most people just eat breakfast at home, but do breakfast diners just not exist, or did we happen to miss them? Were we just bad at Googling? Many thanks and keep up the good work, Yanis. I mean, I've talked about this before. Japanese breakfasts are horrific. Often, unless you go to a nice ryokan, nice traditional inn where they have like a really nice course. But no, generally it's kind of like what most people eat is a leftover meal from the night before. It'll be some fish that's cold out of the fridge with some rice and miso soup. It's not overly great. I don't like it. And when I'm on the go, I will happily admit that I do get McDonald's breakfast, mega muffin, can't go wrong. And I'll run into somewhere like Denny's or Jonathan's. I was in Jonathan's yesterday and I got like some bacon and eggs and whatnot. But no, generally breakfast in Japan, not great. Not great at all. What are your thoughts, Pete? What do you normally do when you're here for breakfast?
You're a little mega muffin, whatever it's called. I agree, actually. It is quite hard to... Because, I mean, all around London town centre, there are breakfast options. There's, you know, your Ballon and your kind of little dines and stuff. I think I can only remember ever having two breakfasts in the whole of... And one was in Tsukiji the fish market. But that was like post nightclub, sort of going home, like, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning kind of breakfast. But very few opportunities to do that sort of thing. So yeah, you are kind of stuck to Dick. I was sort of like go to one of those kind of places that sell like rice with like pork belly on top. I can't remember what they call that, but that thing, those shops that sell that thing, they seem to be open 24 hours. So yeah, 24 hour diners, but there's no specific breakfast options. I would say there's no, I think only like the kind of Western style coffee shops where you get like croissants and stuff. That's a kind of breakfasty meal. But I've had it in like traditional, I've stood in a couple of ryokans and the breakfasts are delicious, but they are like, it's just a bit of fish, a bit of like a little bento box or something, bit of fish, bit of maybe a bit of natto if you're lucky or unlucky, depending on how you feel about natto, and just a lot of rice just to get the stodge into you. And it could be a bit weird for some eating anything that's curried or anything that's a little bit stronger for breakfast. But you know, a lot of people around the world eat curried things and quite spicy stuff for breakfast. And I bloomin' love a spicy breakfast, me.
Ugh, I cannot imagine. Curry and coffee is like my worst nightmare for breakfast. Not a chance in hell.
Oh well. Never mind.
All right.
I got a message from Peter Dawson. Peter Dawson. Hi, Chris and Pete. I wanted to ask about driving in Japan, or particularly getting gas. When I was in Japan last year, I noticed no gas stations in the major cities and only one in Hakone, which, while popular, I don't think qualifies as a major city. Are they quite rare unless you're in the countryside, or are they hiding in some secret underground gas hound club where you must wrestle Master Wato or Wato for the right to refuel? Would you appreciate some tips on this, as I do hope to rent a car the next time I go and check out some of northern Japan. All the best, Peter Dawson from Kelowna in Canada. Wonderful name of a place to live in Canada. But yeah, I don't see that many gas stations. Have you got to do it yourself, or are there people there to do it for you?
Yeah, I mean, this is the best thing about petrol stations in Japan. They do it for you, which wasn't really a thing. It is now in the UK. You can find people to do it, but in the UK, for those of you who haven't been in the UK, you have to do it yourself. Which is fine. But then I moved to Japan and my local petrol station, in fact, most petrol stations do it all for you. You turn up, you say, Mantan onegai shimasu, which means like a full tank, please. And then they go, what kind of car? And you say, regular, which is regular petrol. And then they ask, is it, you're going to pay cash or card? Like card or genkin? And you say, genkin, it's cash. And that's it. Those three words, and off you go. And you just sit there and they do all the work for you and they give you a little towel to wipe your window. And I recently discovered if you pay the correct amount of change to the coin, like with coins, whatnot, they'll give you like free tissues. So bonus.
Wow.
You don't have to get out of the car. They do it for you. they wipe your windows, do the petrol, and you get some free tissues. Bloody petrol stations in Japan are the best. No questions asked. If you can find one.
Not bad.
Which you can't.
Not bad. That's enjoyable.
Yeah, they are quite rare. I don't know why. I don't know what the science behind it is. They are not as easy to find as in the UK, from my experience. I'm not sure why that is. And certainly in cities, it's a little bit of a hurdle. Just the other day, I was renting a car. And when you rent a car in Japan, when you take it back, you have to have it filled to the top, right? You have to quickly fill it up at the nearest petrol station and hand it back. But I could not find a petrol station, so I just gave up and paid the fine instead. And I was like, I can't find it. Sorry, I'll pay the fine. So just do that. That's my tip as well. If you're renting a car in Japan, rather than fill up the car, just pay the fine. It only works out to be like an extra 100 yen more. And it saves you the hassle of going on an expedition to find a petrol station. Life hacks. Life hacks with Abroad Japan. And avoid the Pringles.
Relax.
Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into Abroad Japan. georgiapanpodcast@gmail.com. Well, shut up.
He's breaking down. He's breaking
down.
Don't
you dare.
He's georgiapanpodcast@gmail.com.
We'll be back same time next week to do it all over again, guys. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, many thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next few days. Have a good one, folks.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around the duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster, Annette Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.